number of persons here this evening who haven't been with us for this Brahma Samhita seminar, so I'll just do a real quick overview of where we've been, what we've covered. We've covered through text 8. Text 1 is the thesis or Paribhasa Sutra of the entire Sri Brahma Samhita, identifying Krishna and Govinda specifically as the cause of all causes, the absolute truth, the supreme person who has an eternal body of bliss and knowledge and is the source of everything. And the rest of Brahma Samhita is expanding on that. In texts 2 through 5, after hearing about Krishna, we heard about the abode of Krishna, the place where Krishna dwells, Goloka Vrindavan, and we heard about the central, the corolla, the whirl, from which petals come. The central part is the abode of Radha Krishna, and where there's kalpa riksha trees and surabhi cows and all kinds of transcendental presentations for Krishna's pleasure and pastimes. Then the abodes of the gopis are the petals and residents are the other associates of Krishna. We heard about the region surrounding that Vraja realm, meaning Mathura and Dwarka, that region called Swetadweep within Sri Brahma Samhita, and what are the elements or components or what's there in Swetadweep aside from the abodes of the Chaturvyuha, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, and so many other entities, jewels and mystic powers and opulences of different varieties and perfections of karma, artha, dhamma, moksha, and the four Vedas and the dinkpals and so many tridents and so many things we heard. While discussing that realm of Krishna, we also heard about the 18-syllable Gopal mantra that is inscribed in a six-sided or hexagonal form within that corolla or world, the central part where Krishna resides. And we heard some descriptions of yantra, use of a yantra, meditation upon a yantra, along with chanting of mantra for achieving the perfection that Lord Brahma achieved. And I mentioned that this is not a process that we follow, and there were a number of questions about why is this there, why is that there, why is something else there, and I said, I don't know, I can't answer that question, because it's not something that there's much written about. Do a word search in Prabhupada's books, letters, and lectures for the word yantra, and you won't find it. There's not detail to give information about, because there isn't information. It's not part of our process. We described it because it's there in Sri Brahma Samhita. It's apparently something that was a useful process, specifically at least for Lord Brahma and perhaps others. It is something that yantras are something that are present on some altars, and exactly how they're used, even those that have them on their altars don't know. It's like a decoration or something, or It's a depiction of the spiritual world in a graphic form. So it is a transcendental depiction of Krishna's abode and his place of pastimes. But the details of what goes into that, it's only what our acharyas have given us that we can offer some information about, some explanation. And then we heard a transition verse number 6, where the Lord is associating with his internal chit potency, having nothing to do with his material potency. Although it's his potency, he has no direct involvement with it. And then we heard text 7 and 8, where again it's repeated. He has nothing to do with the material energy, but at the same time, it's not totally disconnected from him, rather by his glancing over that material energy in the form of Mahavishnu's glancing upon the material energy, creation takes place. And we heard about the reason for that glance. We heard there are two main compassionate reasons. One is the Lord's desire for the living entities who are at that time during cosmic annihilation, because the Vedic picture of time is everything is cyclical. Seasons and ages of mankind and time. Days and hours and years and everything is cyclical. That's the picture of time. The wheel of time. And during the time of cosmic annihilation, all the living entities are in a dormant state, covered consciousness state, susupti state, within the body of Mahavishnu. And he considers, out of compassion, he would like to see them experience the fulfillment of their utmost happiness. And that's not happening in that susupti state. And so it's just a desire for them to have that fulfillment, ultimate happiness, natural, intrinsic to their nature, happiness. And also the second compassionate desire is the reflection of his internal potency, sometimes called Chaya Devi, many other names of that same entity. He wishes for her to have some service because he knows she wants. So out of compassion, he's wishing for her to have some service. And then the whole process of creation starts to move. Because of that desire, we heard Rama Devi, his internal potency, facilitates his desire. That's her desire, is to serve her Lord and Master. So she expands herself or deploys her potencies, one of which is time energy, and with that time energy carries the living entities. There's a lot of living entities from the body of Mahavishnu into the glance of Mahavishnu, entrusts those living entities and the time energy to Shambhu, who carries that glance of Mahavishnu to contact the material energy. We heard about the glance of Mahavishnu. We saw those nice images of the powerhouse, the electricity, the copper wire conductor, and the electrical device. So the copper wire or the electrical carrier is Shambhu, and the device is Durga, or Maya, or Pradhan, again depending upon the way in which we want to describe or characterize that material energy, dormant material energy. When the living entities and the time energy contact Pradhan, it becomes essentially impregnated or agitated, and then the elements that are undifferentiated start to differentiate out. the first of which is false ego, ahamkara. And then false ego mixing with the modes of nature then separates out the other elements of the 24 elements. And so we then have mahatattva. The difference of these two terminologies is pradhan is undifferentiated sum total of the material energy. Mahatattva is in its differentiated elemental state. Same thing in a different condition, the womb of a mother, potentially before impregnation and then after impregnation. And we heard finally about these two parts of, as with the womb of a mother, supplying ingredients as well as a chamber for the living entity to grow. So also pradhan, or the material energy, has these two aspects. The ingredient aspect and the accommodating chamber aspect. Adhara Shakti is the term that Bhakti Siddhanta uses and is commonly found in scripture. Nimitta Maya. And the other has this other term, Upadan Maya. If the efficient cause and the immediate cause. There's all kinds of nice nomenclature. But these two different parts. Ingredients and chamber. And then finally, just like this picture, we heard Baladeva Vidyabhusan in his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Govinda Bhasya, state that just as there's these two parts of Prakriti, there's two causal factors from Mahavishnu's side. One, his glance that agitates pradhan and it differentiates into the elements, that's Advaita Acharya. That aspect of Mahavishnu corresponds with Advaita Acharya. And Karana Dakshayi Vishnu is the term that's used to indicate that aspect of his same glance that is the immediate cause or makes arrangements for the chamber for material creation to take place within this field of the material energy. And that's where we ended. So for those of you that didn't participate, there's a little mini review. And now we're going to be discussing two verses together, text 9 and 10. And there's about five different parts of what I want to discuss, but we'll start with the spiritual world. So in that spiritual world, in Krishna Loka, specifically in Braja, Krishna enjoys pastimes with his internal potency. His Ladini potency, his pleasure potency, who then expands. Radha is his Ladini potency, and she expands into so many of her expansions, which in Leela are cowherd girls, gopis, but they're just expansions of Radha, which means she has all qualities, and they each have some parts of her all qualities. But some are good at singing, some are good at talking, some are good at making garlands, some are good at different things. She's good at everything. And there are expansions of her. And there's tens of thousands of expansions, and they're principal ones. But they're all expansions of Radha. They're all goddesses of fortune, or Lakshmis, identified in Brahma Samhita. So I'm going to read one passage from the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, very short. Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of all opulences, yet upon seeing those autumn nights, scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, he turned his mind toward loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potency. So, this is the original language of the purport, is the original creative desire. We heard the very, very beginning. Krishna is like a diamond in the midst of this world. And from him, the diamond, emanate or originate all potencies. So one of his potencies is the potency to enjoy. That's Ladini potency. So he calls upon, inspired by, enthused by the arrangements of Yogamaya potency, the autumn season, he then contemplates enjoying. So he calls upon his internal potency for that. It's him and his own potency. It's not something outside of himself. In our case, we look for enjoyment of necessity outside of ourselves because we're not complete like Krishna is. So we want a friend. So we go find a friend. Or we want something to eat. We go find something to eat. We want to hear some nice music. So we go hear some nice music. It's something outside of ourselves. The point is, Krishna's enjoyment is not like that. It's hard to conceive of because we only know the other kind. But Krishna's kind is, it's his own potency. And his own potency, we heard several times. It's Vishuddha Sattva. There's no touch of material contamination. There's no modes of nature. It's described not only, just like the selflessness of love of the gopis is such that they don't desire anything for personal sense gratification. Here's how Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita describes. The love of the gopis is called Rudha Bhav. It is pure and spotless. It is not at any time lust. Krishna Das Kaviraj makes this definition. Very simple definition. Lust means personal sense gratification. And love means Krishna's senses should be satisfied and gratified. Very simple definition. In the spiritual world, the gopas and the gopis and the cows and the river Jamuna and the peacocks and everybody and everything have one interest, and that's satisfying the senses of Krishna. Narada, in his Narada Pancharatra, gives this definition. Sarvapadi vinirmutam tatparatvena niralam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. Bhakti is defined as using the senses to satisfy the senses of the master of the senses. Rishikas are for Rishikesha. The senses are for the service of the master of the senses. So, in Goloka, there's no lust. There's no, my senses are to be enjoyed. The reason I do something is I enjoy. It's the reason I do something is Krishna will enjoy. There's no lust. There's sense experience, and that is Krishna's senses are to be pleased. It's the difference between night, literally, and day. Darkness and enlightenment or illumination. So Krishna Das Kaviraj describes the love of the gopis as like that, spotless and pure, there is no lust. Then he goes on to say that conventionally, that pure love of the gopis has become celebrated as so-called lust, because it looks like what we do. But it's actually the other way around. What we do is the perversion of that. And then he goes on to say, dear devotees of the Lord, such as Uddhava, they desire that love. Indicating those who are beyond, totally beyond any attraction for satisfying one's own senses, like Uddhava. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the other example that's commonly given. His functioning or his standards as a sannyasi, really strict, without all the detail. Lots of detail. Really strict. Strict. But he considered the love of the gopis the most exalted. So it's not, you know, I'm strict, but I like being loose too. It's not loose. It's pure. Unadulterated. Vishuddha, sattva, desire for happiness of Krishna. Using the senses fully in the service of Krishna. So that's the spiritual world. Just like our chart. That's Goloka, way up there on the top. And then there's Ayodhya, and then there's Vaikuntha, and then there's the causal ocean. On the other side of the causal ocean, or then the causal ocean, is Mahavishnu. On the other side is material creation. We're hearing about the material creation part, but it's from Mahavishnu. He has a desire. Krishna's desire is happiness, enjoying pleasure pastimes with his own internal potency. Mahavishnu is already enjoying with his own internal potency. Her name is Rama. But there's a reflection of his internal potency, and he is desiring for her to have some service, for her to have some happiness. Just like the love of the gopis is selfless, it is Krishna's position. He's not desiring his own sense satisfaction. He's desiring the happiness of his devotees. That's love. The happiness of the beloved. And it's two ways. It's not only one way. It's two ways. Krishna has such love for his devotees. So much so that he desires to experience the happiness that they're experiencing. He desires to experience the happiness of Radha in her love for him. And he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for that purpose. So, coming down, now here's Mahavishnu and his desire to see the happiness or the service of Chaya Devi, his reflected potency. Now we're going to go down yet a little bit where, since he, we heard twice, he does not associate directly with that material energy, his glance does. And so that glance is the original worldly act of procreation. Or, you know, in little grosser language, mundane sex life. So what we're hearing in verses 9 and 10 is reproductive organs contacting other reproductive organs and producing praja. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, this is not indecorous talk, like, you know, low-class people talk about these things. You know, reproductive organs of males and females. Rather, he says, it's more like in medical science, the physician, the medical practitioner, looks upon such subject matters in a very different way than licentious people look on those subject matters. He's saying it's that kind. It's perfectly appropriate. Because it is the original act of material procreation, which is a perverted reflection. What to speak of how it gets more and more distorted and more distorted and more perverted as the modes of nature go lower. But this is in this mode of goodness position where to fulfill the desire of Mahavishnu to see the living entities have the chance to again re-enter into their position of ultimate happiness, they need bodies. And there's a procedure for producing bodies, and it's the procreation procedure. And so Lord Shiva, representing the male generating principle, contacts the material energy, representing the female reproductive potential. And again, he says, it's not indecorous talk, not low-class dialogue. It's what's going on. So now we'll go to the verses and chant them together.
Linga yonyatmaka jata ima maheshwari praja.
Pretty short. All offspring of the consort of the great Lord Maheshwara of this mundane world are of the nature of the embodiment of the masculine, mundane masculine and feminine generative organs. Again, one might wonder, gee, this is a scripture. What are we talking about? Generative organs in scripture. Because it's the original procreation. And we're going to hear, because that's there in the original act of procreation, Shambhu contacting Pradhan. Therefore, similarly, whatever is produced from that original act is embodied in the products. That is to say, the various entities, the forms of life that are generated, they also have this same propensity. So the scientists may say, no, no, it's just genetically coded. But where'd the code come from? The principle is this seminal principle. Seminal in this sense, that the seeds of future events are there within. That's a dictionary definition. So now we'll go to a little description of what is Shambhu. Well, actually, we already had a little of that discussion this morning. He's called a dim twilight reflection of Mahavishnu. He's called the divine halo and other such things. Here's a little description from, yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Maitreya speaking to Vidura, where he is describing what happens when Shambhu contacts Pradhan and Mahatattva starts to form. Here's Maitreya's description. Thereafter, influenced by the interactions of eternal time, the glance carries time and the living entities, the supreme sum total of matter called the Mahatattva became manifested, and in this Mahatattva, the unalloyed goodness, the Supreme Lord, sowed the seeds of the universal manifestation out of his own body. Now that's something that's coming up tomorrow, but whence Mahatattva is there, the elements, from the body of Mahavishnu, from the pores of his body, come seeds of universes. And they're spiritual because they're directly in contact with his body. But as they enter into the Mahatattva, the elements of the Mahatattva start to congeal or form around those seeds. So universal seeds. So there's the seeds of the living entity, that's the soul. There's the seeds of the universes, the living entities are coming from his glands, the seeds of universes are coming from the pores of his skin. And as they enter into the Mahatattva, the elements start to combine or congeal around those seeds. And here's Prabhupada's purport. In due course of time, the impregnated material energy was first manifest as the total material ingredients, that's the Mahatattva. Everything takes its own time to fructify, and therefore the word kala choditat, or influenced by time, is used. The Mahatattva is the total consciousness, because a portion of it is represented in every one as the intellect. So one of the elements that's generated within the Mahatattva is intelligence. Mind, intelligence, and false ego. So false ego in contact with the mode of goodness, the mind is produced. False ego in contact with the mode of passion, intelligence is produced. False ego in contact with the mode of ignorance, the five gross elements are produced. And from the five gross elements, the five working senses, knowledge acquiring senses, and five objects are those senses. That's 20 elements alone, just from the mode of ignorance. And then there's the mode of goodness, the mind, and the mode of passion, intellect, plus false ego. So there we have 23 elements. So the intellect of all living entities is supplied by, generated by, this glance of Mahavishnu and Shambhu contacting Pradhan and agitating and the elements separating. The Mahatattva is directly connected with the supreme consciousness of the supreme being, but still it appears as matter. The Mahatattva, or shadow of pure consciousness, is the germinating place of all creation. It is pure consciousness with a slight addition of the material mode of passion, and therefore activity is generated from this point. That's Prabhupada's purport. So now I'm going to connect, or attempt to connect, this statement of Prabhupada, the shadow of pure consciousness, shadow of pure consciousness, Mahatattva, with a phrase that Bhaktisiddhanta used in this morning's verse, text 8. He called it perverted cognitive faculty, if you remember that phrase. Perverted cognitive faculty. Prabhupada writes in this next purport of the third canto of Bhagavatam, the Mahatattva is the via media between pure spirit and material existence. Catch it? It's subtle. Just like the river Viraja, it's the dividing realm or space or place between the spiritual sky and the material energy. Material energy doesn't touch spirit. Spirit doesn't touch material energy. There's the river Viraja in between. And within that river Viraja, Mahavishnu lies, and he glances upon the sum total of material elements. They begin to differentiate as the Mahatattva, which Srimad Bhagavatam is identifying as the via media between pure spirit and material existence. The juncture of matter and spirit, wherefrom the false ego of the living entity is generated. Well, false ego is a problem, because through the agency of false ego, we forget who we really are and we identify with who we aren't. And then we begin to search for happiness in terms of what we aren't. And we're very stubborn about it too. Like a donkey. Even we suffer, we get kicked, we keep doing it. That kind of false ego foolishness. And just keep doing it and doing it, and lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. until a little light goes on that says, I'm not, this isn't fun. I want an option to this one. And then with such a desire, Krishna may send a devotee. And the devotee says, here's your option. And we may say, well, that sounds very nice. Let me try that option. That's where we are. We're trying that option. We're doing sadhana bhakti. But there's this in-between matter and spirit region or realm, the mahatattva. And these terms, again, are shadow of pure consciousness and perverted cognitive faculty. There is a sense of self, but it's perverted. And not only the sense of self is perverted, but what is happiness is also perverted. And that's the next topic I want to discuss. It's actually what the topic is of these two verses, both 9 and 10. Bhaktisiddhanta in his language, again in text 8, along with perverted cognitive faculty, it's seminal principle of mahat. And again, a dictionary definition of seminal. Containing seeds of later existence. So like if you have in your kitchen a bag of mustard seeds, maybe next to that a bag of mung beans, and next to that is whatever something else you have in seed form. That's a bunch of seeds. So that the term that's used is seminal. So the mahatattva is the seminal principle of later existences, material existence, but it's still just in a bag or in a seed form. Because they haven't yet gotten together, the elements haven't gotten together to make bodies and planets and species and all those things. So from the point that's being made in these two verses, 9 and 10, that's what our discussion is this evening. It's the Shambhu contacting Pradhan is the prototype or the primordial lusty desire or male-female contact and the attraction for male-female contact and specifically with the generative organs. That's what this verse is indicating. All other productions of Shambhu contacting Pradhan has this same feature. And one doesn't have to go to sex education school to learn it. The insects, they somehow know. And the birds and the beasts and the dogs and the whatever it is, species. It's built into the product of the combination of Shambhu and Pradhan. The original lust. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks of him being that original lust. Here's the verse. Chapter 3, text 37. Arjuna asks Krishna, what's the cause of sinful activity? Krishna says that the cause of sinful activity is contact, kamesha, krodesha. It's rajoguna samudbhava, contact with the mode of passion, later transformed into wrath, in Prabhupada's purport of that verse. He writes, the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam as janmad yasya yataha itaratascha, or the origin of everything is the Supreme Brahman, therefore the origin of lust is also the Supreme. So I'm like a lawyer building a case here. The original lust emanates, as everything does, emanates from Krishna. And it's born of contact, a living entity contacting the mode of passion. Shambhu contacts Pradhan, in which the modes of nature are there in their undisturbed state, but they become disturbed. Passion becomes activated. Then life forms are generated because the elements are there. So, why would Why would this? This is one of these why questions. Why does Krishna do this? Because he says also in Bhagavad Gita that this tendency, lust, is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. It causes all bad things by all bad people who do bad things. So why does Krishna create it? And the answer goes back to that compassionate desire of Mahavishnu. If the living entities don't have life forms, which come about by the contact with the modes of nature, by Shambhu, and thus agitating the mode of passion and all the rest, then this seed of lusty tendency arises or awakens, when before it was dormant, but their consciousness was dormant. The answer is, it's an opportunity being provided to the living entity to correct that problem, to again become situated in their liberated state. Here's Srila Prabhupada describing that in his purport to 363 Bhagavatam. Every individual soul remains unconscious after the dissolution of the creation, and thus enters into the Lord with his material energy. These individual living entities are conditioned souls everlastingly. But in each and every material creation, they are given the chance to liberate themselves and become free souls. That's the understanding. Krishna is giving the opportunity for them to again experience their ultimate happiness, their constitutional, total happiness. There's another option, and that's this lusty one, or trying to be the enjoyer of matter independently of Krishna one, the pinnacle of which is mundane sex attraction. It's what makes the world go round. Male-female attraction makes the continuation of the species go on and on and on. But so that's the material side, but the option is, with the senses, they can be then utilized in service to Krishna. So we're hearing in these verses. Tomorrow morning we'll cover verses. If you want to read it ahead of time, I was told by some devotees, it's helping them if they read the verses ahead of time. You can know ahead of time. We're going to be discussing tomorrow morning 11 through 17. It's a good number of verses, but the purports are very short and the message is succinct. We're hearing about creation, to go from the unmanifest to the manifest state of material creation, on this position of Mahavishnu lying within the causal ocean. A compassionate way of giving living entities an opportunity to come again to their ultimate happiness. But this other option is also there, the downwards directed option. Yeah. So I'll just end this session by describing some of the other things that are generated by the agitation of Pradhan creating the Mahatattva. So one of the things that's obvious, we've already mentioned, the 24 elements separate out. The undifferentiated sum total of material energy, Pradhan, becomes transformed into this differentiated, separated out 24 elements, starting with false ego and then onward. False ego mixing with the modes of nature. Here's a description, by the way, in the second canto, the middle chapters, and the third canto, middle chapters, all of this subject matter is discussed, so many of these references come from there, second and third canto. A verse from the second canto reads, "The self-centered materialistic ego, thus being transformed into three features, becomes known as the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance in three divisions, namely, the powers that evolve matter, dravya shakti." So the elements separate out. To do that, it requires a shakti or potency to do that. That's dravya shakti. Knowledge of material creations, or kriya shakti, and the intelligence that guides such material activities, jnana shakti. So that's generated. Then there's this description of Hiranmaya. We're going to hear Hiranmaya a couple more times in the course of Brahma Samhita. Here's what Kapila Dev describes to Devahuti, chapter 26 of the third canto. "After the Supreme Personality of Godhead impregnates material nature with His internal potency, material nature delivers the sum total of cosmic intelligence." So there's the little intelligences that each one of us are endowed with. And then there's this cosmic intelligence which guides the whole cosmic creation. And that has a name. It's Hiranmaya. This takes place in material nature when she, that's material nature, is agitated by the destinations of the conditioned souls. Destinations, or like destiny, providence. You would say the karma. But so when the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu, their karma is suspended. Their karma is suspended because the time energy is suspended. And you need time energy to activate karma. You know, like to do anything, you know, to walk across, get up and walk across the floor, you have to have past, present, and future. You have to have time to do anything. So when the time to bring about dissolution, the Lord withdraws His time energy. Or Rama, to assist the Lord, withdraws the time energy. Everything comes to a screeching halt. Because without time, you don't have activity. So when activity stops, destiny stops. Or it's suspended. It doesn't become zero, it's just like suspended. Consciousness is suspended, and the whole show is on hold for a long period. And then, when the Lord desires again creation, the time energy activates the whole thing. And then, the destiny of the living entities becomes agitated. Prabhupada writes, "The words daivat kshurita, agitated by the destiny of the conditioned souls, are very significant, referring to a living entity's past lives from a previous creation." So, at the time of creation, they're activated. At the time of dissolution, they're held in suspension. But the information is still there. The code is there, just, you know, the computer shuts down. And then you turn the computer on and the information is still there. And within the subtle mind, so the living entities that are in this suspended state or susupti state, the mind, intelligence, and false ego are there. Subtle bodies are there. Information is stored in those subtle bodies. But there's no time energy acting, and so it's inactive. The living entities plus time are cast into the material energy, pradhan. Then you get the elements, plus time is active, plus the modes of nature, become activated by the souls and the time energy, and things start to move. This is the unfolding of the creation. It's how Krishna does it. So Hiranmaya is one of the entities or things generated at the time of the creation of the Mahatattva. And one other item that's mentioned is the demigods. As the elements are generated, this is found in the Kapila Dev's discussion, with each element. Now, it's not the demigods that are superintending the universe, because there's no universes yet. It's just elements. But there's demigods of the elements. And we're going to hear about the demigods of the elements a little bit tomorrow. I'll give you a sneak preview. As the elements kind of form around those seeds of universes, they're not in a state of cooperation. The word that Bhaktisiddhanta uses, conglomeration. The non-application of the conglomerating principle. They're not cooperating. So what happens? These demigods that are the demigods of the presiding deities of the elements, they pray. We're going to hear their prayer. Help! We can't cooperate. Please give us the capacity so we can create our product. We can create universes and varieties of forms of life and all those nice things. But we need your help. So we'll hear what happens. When the Mahatattva is created, at least for our verses 9 and 10, the demigods of those elements are also there. These are prototype demigods. They're not, you know, the ones that are in each universe, because there's no universes yet. We're almost done. Verse 10. We'll chant that one together.
Shaktiman Purusha Yoyam Linga Rupi Maheshvara Tasmin Abhirabhu Linge Mahavishnur Jagatpati.
Translation. The person embodying the material causal principle, namely the great lord of this mundane world, Maheshvara, Shambhu, in the form of the male generating organ, is joined to his female consort, the limited energy, Maya, as the efficient causal principle. The Lord of the world, Maheshwara, Mahavishnu, is manifest in him by his subjective portion in the form of his glance. So, this is what's happened so far. Is someone asked this morning about Lord Brahma, where does he fit into this picture? He hasn't appeared yet. He's going to. He'll have his part to play. This is called Sarga. It's what Mahavishnu does to bring about creation. And this is kind of slow motion, step by step. And if you notice, there's this cause and effect, and that effect then becomes the cause of the next effect, becomes the cause of the next effect. The domino effect type of thing. But let us please bear in mind the theme of Brahma Samhita. Krishna is the central pivot. He's the acme of entity. From him all energies originate. So all these things that we're speaking about, this energy and that energy, they all have their original source of emanation in Krishna. And he expands, and those expansions expand, and they have their energies, and those energies do things. If you can remember from this morning, when Arjuna and Krishna go to the abode of Mahavishnu, they see all these 16 energies. And these are energies that he deploys for the purpose of creation. Thank you. And now they're being deployed. We're hearing some of them, not all of them. But as they, by the glance of Mahavishnu, Shambhu, contact Pradhan, these different energies are being activated. Okay. To be continued. By the end of tomorrow morning, we'll be done with creation. We'll go on to other topics. Yes. It's on. Go ahead. Where did the modes of nature start? They're intrinsic to matter. So let me ask you a question. When does matter start? Matter is eternal. As Krishna is eternal, his energies are co-eternal. They're as eternal as he is. And his Bahir Anga Shakti, or his external energy, is part of his energy, and it is also eternal as Krishna is eternal. But there are times, boys, sit still. Thank you. There are times when that energy is dormant, and there are times when that energy is activated. And then dormant and activated. And dormant. So it's depending upon the will of the Lord. They're activated when the time energy activates them. And when the time energy is withdrawn, they're deactivated. They're dormant. So the modes are always there. Sometimes active, sometimes dormant. And they're dormant depending upon the time energy and the presence of the living entities. Because the living entities are withdrawn from Pradhan and taken within the body of Mahavishnu. And there's Pradhan. No living entities, no time energy, dormant. Okay?
My question is, how could, earlier you said that you should strive to do what satisfies Krishna. My question is, how can we know what satisfies Krishna?
Through scripture. Krishna discloses, that's what scripture is. He says, this makes me happy. And then, so we know. And then there are those who are very experienced teachers of the scripture, brahmanas, very learned. And they not only have theoretical knowledge, they have practical knowledge, jnana vijnanam. And so through brahmanas and qualified teachers, we can understand, or like guru. Through such persons, we can understand. So guru, sadhu, and shastra are the ways, the three standards by which we can know what's pleasing to Krishna. The three pillars. Guru, sadhu, shastra. Okay? Up front.
Is it possible that somebody has more than one guru, or does everybody only have one guru?
How many do you want? Huh?
One.
Okay. Good enough. But, so here's what... Give him the microphone, please. Here's what Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Are you ready? As far as instructing gurus, one may have many. As far as Diksha gurus, one. And commonly, Diksha guru is previous to that is Shiksha guru. And one may identify or prefer to receive mantra or to receive initiation from a Shiksha guru. And once initiation is there, Diksha is there, only one, not many, but one. But different persons may also provide instructions for an individual. Yes, not exactly like that, but something like that. It's not main. It's a type. It's a category. Let me ask you. You know who is Krishnadas Kaviraj? You know who the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita is? You know what Chaitanya Charitamrita is? The author is Krishnadas Kaviraj. Okay? He's the author. Now, his Diksha Guru was Lord Nityananda. His Shiksha Gurus, plural, were many. At the end of every chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, he writes, I offer my obeisances to Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. Rupa and Raghunath. He's at their feet, begging for their mercy. Rupa and Raghunath. His Diksha Guru is Lord Nityananda, but he's living in Vrindavan in the association of Rupa and Raghunath, and he sees them as his shelter. There's a nice example. It's not like Lord Nityananda can take a hike, right? Not like that. He loves his Diksha Guru. But he has close association with Rupa and Raghunath, and he's at their feet begging for their mercy. Yeah? Yes?
Yeah, there's a question on the Maharaj from Gajari Prabhu. Firstly, he actually wants to thank you for reviewing all the prior sessions at the beginning of this session. He says that was really useful. And then his question is, the river Viraja is also sometimes called the border between the conscious and unconscious realms. Could you please comment on that?
I did. But I could repeat it. I'll say I don't have a lot of realization about it, but I can repeat what our acharyas have said about it. There's two references that explicitly address this. One I read, it's Prabhupada's purport to Maitreya speaking to Vidura about the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva is the total consciousness, because a portion of it is represented in everyone as the intellect. The Mahatattva is directly connected with the Supreme Consciousness of the Supreme Being, but it appears as matter. The Mahatattva, or shadow of pure consciousness, is the germinating place of all creation. It is pure goodness with a slight addition of the material mode of passion, and therefore activity is generated from this point. So it's this close to but not exactly of the spiritual realm kind of a picture. Then, in the next purport, Prabhupada writes, the Mahatattva is the via media between pure spirit and material existence, the juncture of matter and spirit, wherefrom the false ego of the living entity is generated. So, it's not only subtle, it's close to spiritual. And the juncture point between, as the River Viraja is the dividing place between the spiritual and the material realm. The Mahatattva generated by Mahavishnu, who lies within that River Viraja, generates this shadow of pure consciousness, or the via media between pure spirit and material existence. It's not only subtle, it's very close to pure goodness, but with some taint. So it has this unique position. So I just repeated what I read before. Here's a visual image that for me it works. Imagine you have a giant vat of white paint, and you take a little eyedropper of blue and a little eyedropper of red and squirt it into that big vat of paint and stir it. What happens? It's off-white. See, just a little bit, but it's off-white. It's not pure white anymore. And then time passes, and the very nature of passion is it generates activity, and material activity that's generated has a reaction, not only an action. So it's like time passes and you got more red, even you didn't do any, add more red, it just got more red. And the blue, and it gets more blue, and you stir that. And just keep going over a period of time, and it's not white anymore. It's off-white. It's more off-white and more off-white. It becomes darker and darker. So that's as time moves, the ages of mankind also become darker and darker. And the forms of life become more and more covered by these influences of the modes of nature. So the modes of nature are there in this Mahatattva, but it's in its beginning state, it's more on the side of the mode of goodness and very little of the mode of passion, which creates activity, which creates reactions, which creates more activity, which makes things darker and darker. That's one way of describing what this Mahatattva state is. It's a very close to spirit, close to the mode of goodness, or excuse me, close to pure goodness state. But the mode of passion is there and it activates things and it gets darker through passage of time. Anything else? Way in the back. Move quickly.
Basically, this is the basic question of creation again. As all the jivatmas are in susupti state, so in the first inhalation,
let's not go there because time is cyclical. It's almost like once upon a time there was no creation. That's presumed in the question that you're asking. And I'm objecting to the frame of the question, or the presumption of the question. It's cyclical. Since the beginning of time. So when is the beginning of time? When does infinity begin? Okay, so don't think in those terms.
Basically, the thing is that when all the jivatmas are in Mahavishnu, so they are not contaminated, or they are not exposed to the modes of goodness.
Let's not do that. It's the same. You're asking the same question in a different way. There's nitya bhadhas, as there are nitya siddhas. Okay? Okay.
My question is from the previous session. I have written two sentences and I'm not sure if maybe I missed something or I'm not heard.
Go ahead.
I have written that Mahavishnu's glance is Shambhu and also Mahavishnu's glance is Advaitacharya. Now I'm trying to correlate it because
okay.
We said earlier, I heard earlier.
Okay. I'll clarify. So Mahavishnu is the person who's glancing. That aspect of Mahavishnu, when he's glancing, that agitates the pradhan to produce the elements, that Mahavishnu, who is glancing, is known as Advaitacharya. And that Mahavishnu, who is glancing, that creates the accommodating chamber aspect or activate the accommodating chamber aspect of pradhan. That's Chiradakshay Vishnu. The glance itself, like, you know, from the picture, there's the rays coming from the eye of Mahavishnu, like a flashlight, and from the flashlight comes the rays in the darkness. The rays in the darkness, that's Shambhu. Then there's the flashlight, or the person who's glancing. That's Mahavishnu, known by either Karanadakshay Vishnu or Advaita Acharya, depending upon, it's a detail, but it's depending upon the aspect of pradhan that's being activated. It's the same glance, the same person, but he is known by this name or that name, depending upon the aspect of pradhan that's being activated. Okay?
But Maharaj, I was trying to correlate with one of the Mayapur lecture where we said that Advaita Acharya is sometimes considered as Lord Shiva, and sometimes we call it as Mahavishnu.
And that's because of, we'll go back to something spoken this morning. Remember the discussion about Sadashiva?
Yes.
In Vaikuntha realm, there is Sadashiva. That one. It's complex. It's complex. But that's Sadashiva. So sometimes he's thought of this way, Advaita Acharya, as Mahavishnu. Sometimes he's thought of in that way.
And another thing, Maharaj, I have heard, I'm not sure, in Vaikuntha planets, Lord Shiva is there, or Lord Shiva is only after
Lord Shiva the is as Sadashiva, he's there.
In Vaikuntha planets.
Sadashiva is in the Vaikuntha realm. Please appreciate the topic is complex. There are different aspects of, or features of, or manifestations of Lord Shiva, all the way from the bottom of the universe to Vaikuntha, and several different locations and manifestations and aspects in between. Very complex.
Thank you.
Yeah, this question is from Arvind Prabhu. He asks, Narad Muni is able to go into both the spiritual and material worlds.
Yes.
Which energy is he taking shelter of for this unique ability?
The internal energy. He's a bhakta. He only knows that one. The internal energy. And through the agency of the internal energy, he can do whatever he likes. And because he's a preacher, he goes to this realm. And because he's a pure devotee, he goes to that realm. But it's to the agency of the internal potency.
And he also asked, is there more information about why the Lord thought it fit to award Narada Muni with this benediction?
Why he thought to award Narada Muni with benediction?
With this benediction.
Because he's a pure devotee, and he likes to preach. So he gave him the zoom zoom power. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. What is pravritti mean?
What is what?
Pravritti?
Pravritti?
Perverted.
Yeah, what does it mean?
Okay. You have you ever looked at yourself in a mirror?
Sometimes.
Imagine a mirror that's sometimes, like in cars, they have mirrors that are convex, so you can see the car behind you and it looks very close, right? And then there's concave. So you stand in front of a convex mirror and you'll go like this big fat thing. And you stand by a concave mirror and you look like this little skinny thing. And then there's one that's like curved and you look like a curved thing. So if the reflecting surface is distorted, then the reflection of the object, not the object, but the reflection of the object will be distorted. So that's what's remedied by perverted reflection. That which exists in the spiritual world, you know, chapter 15, Bhagavad Gita, the description of a banyan tree, where the roots are up and the branches are down. You know about that one? Chapter 15? You ever seen a tree with the branches down and the roots up? Here's where you can see it. You go to a lake. On the opposite side of the lake, there's a tree with the branches up and the roots down. But you look at that tree reflected in the water, and the roots are up and the branches are down. That's this place. It's not only on the lake, but there's distortions in the lake because there's wind, so the tree looks like it's moving. That's a perverted reflection of the tree. That's what happens here. That which exists in the spiritual world is pure. When it's reflected in the material world, it's a perverted reflection. Distorted, upside down image. What is not to be done is to be done. What to be done is not to be done. That displays perverted reflection. Okay? Yes.
Yeah, this question is from Vajita Singh. Question is, in one of the lectures you mentioned that purity and desire is the way to reach the mood of the gopis. How do we desire in the right way in our daily practice, and what is the best way to reach that purity?
You follow in the footsteps of the souls who have already done so. That's the best way. Mahajaniyana kata sapanta. And we have our acharyas who are setting such nice example and giving such nice teachings, and we hear from them and we follow their example. And of course we have our Srila Prabhupada, Chandra Acharya, who study the writings about his life and become inspired. Wow. How much Prabhupada sacrificed and how diligently Prabhupada tried to establish the instruction of his spiritual master, of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya within this world, and follow his example, assist him in that mission. Anything else? Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is, universes are created from the body of the Vishnu. So does universe also has soul? Living entities have soul.
Does the universe has a soul? Does the universe are created from the body of Vishnu? Does the universe have soul?
Well, in one sense, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu is the universal soul. Okay? Is that it? Okay? Nice question. You've got another one?
Yeah. So, I heard that living entities are impregnated by the glands of
Living entities are impregnated by the glands.
So maybe I missed, but how living entities come out of the body of Vishnu?
Well, it's a finite number, but for practical purposes, unlimited. Too many to count. So we can say unlimited. At the same time, that unlimited is a finite number. You follow?
So my question is, Maharaj, how did they come out of...
How do they come out of Rama Devi entrusts them to Shambhu. Here, you take all these. The word is samasti. All living entities, you take them, carry them over to into the Mahatattva, or to the Pradhan.
So it is not the glance of Vishnu.
It's through his glance Rama Devi takes the living entities from within his body through his glands and trusts them to Shambhu, who carries them to the Pradhan. She's serving him. He's just glancing. Okay? You got another one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we had a little discussion about Susupti stage.
Susupti stage, yeah.
So, I was just wondering if, you know, Vishnu's body is Sachidananda Vigraha, then how living entities are unhappy within the body of Vishnu?
Their consciousness becomes covered because they're tiny. The Supreme Lord is Satchitananda Vigraha. He's the eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's the Supreme Lord in full. The living entities are tiny. So they're, because they're tiny, they can be covered. And they're covered by ignorance. And sometimes that ignorance is really, really thick. And that's the Susupti state. Okay? Can I answer your question?
Yes, Maharaj. I was just wondering, when we are thinking like holy name is so pure and it is going to purify us.
Yes.
Because holy name itself is Lord.
Right.
So I was thinking, you know, when we were within the body of the Lord, still.
That question was already asked. Somebody already asked that one. But I'll answer it again. We can close our eyes and not see light. When we're in the light, free will of the living entity can choose, although in contact with this pure condition, I choose to not, you know, to go away from that purity. The desire of the living entity is still there, even in that susupti state. Just like when you go to sleep, that's not susupti, that's another state of consciousness. But you're not acting on the daytime desires. But those desires are still active in a subtle way. In the susupti state, they're just dormant. Like anesthetized. But they're still there. Just waiting. Tick, tick. Tick, tick. And then till the creation comes, and then it's party time again.
So,
they're still there. They're covering the soul. Desiring separate enjoyment from Krishna covers the soul.
So, when we are chanting the holy name, inattentiveness during chanting, is it?
It's an offense.
Is it like susupti stage? Because
no.
That time we are
no. It's an offense. It's something else. It's an offense. In susupti state, you don't even chant. You're anesthetized. No chanting under anesthesia. Take the microphone away from her.
Krishna Maharaj?
Yes.
Thank you for the lecture, Maharaj. So I had a question regarding today's morning lecture. It's our understanding that we were once in the spiritual world, and we
the fall of the jiva question.
Well, it's actually not that much.
Oh, okay.
Our understanding is we were once in the spiritual world, and because we were envious of Krishna, we came down to material platform. And in when we were there, we had a relationship.
Wait,
with
stop! 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 Stop. We've been through this. Let us not make the mistake of identifying the living entities turning his attention away from Krishna as a chronological event. Let us not make that mistake.
Okay.
It's an ontological event, but not a chronological event. We've been through this.
Okay. I had a different question.
Okay, good, thanks.
My question is, like, when we had that relationship with the Lord, right, and now because we're here, we understand so many different ways that you can have relationships with the Lord, and when we eventually do go back home, back to Godhead, is it that we reestablish that eternal relationship? Because like how we understand it now is it's as if like there's options or something, you know? But when we do go back, come back to Godhead, do we reestablish the relationship that we eternally have?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Supposing you have a bag of seeds. They're common for to use in deity worship as marigolds, because they grow quickly. So you got a bag of marigold seeds. Some of them are yellow and some of them are orange. You can't tell from looking at the seed, is it yellow or orange? But when you plant them, it's going to be yellow or it's going to be orange. And not only yellow or orange, but some of them are big and some of them are, you know, and even amongst those that are big, some of them are really big. And some of them are, you know, so there's variety that's within the seed, even within the species, and even within the color. Similarly, we have our eternal relationship with Krishna, and it will awaken through the process of bhakti. And when it awakens, it is what it is, like a seed when it sprouts. It is what it is. We have our eternal relation with Krishna. We covered something else, but I won't go there right now. Based on association, that may take on a particular feature that without that association, it may not. So we want to hear from Rupa Goswami and, you know, our unobstructed line of disciplic succession very carefully, and not go here and go there and hear this and hear that because, oh, it's about Krishna, why not? We want to hear unadulterated, pure transmission of the message from disciplic succession. So the fullness of our spiritual potential will come through that association. Okay, looks like we're done. Oh, there's a question in the back. All the way in the back? All the way in the back.
So could you explain more about the ingredients and the accommodating...
About the which?
Ingredients supplied.
Ingredients?
Yes, ma'am.
There are two things, right? The ingredients and the accommodating kind.
Okay.
What are the examples of...
What are the examples?
Description.
It's technical. What happened? Here we go. Okay. This is the topic you're asking about, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so here's the sets of There we go. So one of them, this is the ingredient factor. Pradhan supplies ingredients. So Pradhan Maya supplies ingredients. When the living entity is in the time energy contact, Pradhan ingredients, starting with false ego, and then false ego mixing with the modes of nature, etc. So this is sometimes called Upadan Maya. Along with Pradhan Maya. It's also called the material causal principle. This is the one that Advaita Acharya's, that aspect of the glands activates this, the ingredients for creation. Here's a statement. You can write down the references and look them up yourself, the ones from Bhagavatam. But this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where these are four parts of this causal aspect, material causal aspect: time, activity, providence, and nature are four parts of the causal aspect of the external energy. There are three forces that are working within this causal portion: Jnana, Bala, and Kriya, as found in this verse from Sri Teshvatara Upanishad. You're familiar with this?
Yes.
Parasha Shaktir Vivadaiva Shruyate. So there's several references that are describing this one aspect, the ingredient cause, or the material cause of creation from material energy. Then there's the nimitta aspect, or sometimes called adhara shakti, the accommodating chamber aspect of material nature. As the womb of a mother provides accommodating chamber, pradhan, or the material nature, provides the place for generation of universes and species of life and, you know, life. Sometimes it's called the efficient cause of creation, also called the immediate cause of creation, also called the accommodating chamber or darshakti. All different terminologies, again, depending upon the particular emphasis that's being made or the feature or aspect that's being made, it has these different nomenclatures, but it's the two. Upadan and nimitta. Ingredient and accommodating chamber causes. And these are two features of the material energy. You want to hear more? No. Mahatattva specifically has to do with the ingredients. Mahatattva supplies the ingredients. But an aspect of the material nature that provides the accommodating chamber, this is called the nimitta aspect, as opposed to the ingredient aspect. Mahatattva indicates the ingredient, 24. But there's another aspect of that same energy, and that's the accommodating chamber aspect, known by the name Adhara Shakti. Okay. Well, we survived. And tomorrow we're going to be reading verses morning, 11 through 17. Hopefully it'll go quickly. I don't have any graphics or anything, just some simple descriptions. And then from there, that will cover the Mahavishnu, or the Sarga portion, and then we'll go into the Brahma makes his appearance and what he does aspect, this Sarga. And then we're pretty much done with... We're close to done with this nice topic of creation. Okay. Srila Prabhupada, the...
Hare Krishna. I have your attention for a